Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about how to get rid of old electronics on the show today, including donating and recycling. We'll also talk about buying refurbished electronics and what to know in that case. Our regular guest, Jesse LeGrue, is back with us. He's an information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He works with designing, developing, and implementing security standards and protocols. So what questions do you have about getting rid of unwanted electronics? Do you have questions about maybe buying a recycled or refurbished phone or computer? Maybe you're having some tech problems. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Jesse LeGrue, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
Seems like new technology is constantly coming, making the stuff we have outdated. I'm, in fact, going to try very soon to get myself a new iPhone. Do you find that you end up with a lot of older or unused electronic items yourself?
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the most common items that I had extra supply of was cell phones. Many times there's upgrade programs through carriers, and a lot of people may not have a cell phone for multiple years. Some people might have a cell phone for 5 years, but there are a lot of deals by carriers where somebody might upgrade a phone every year. They may get to keep that phone. And then the question is what to do with that phone when you're done with it. And some people, you know, put it on a shelf and it sits there for years, or they might give it to somebody else to use. But it creates a lot of extra devices floating around that, you know, definitely have left me, you know, questioning what to do with it. I've kept extras before, but how often do they get used?
Yeah, that's the thing. And getting rid of them can be difficult, maybe. It's hard to know where to take them. And donating seems to be, you know, I don't know if that's an issue or not, maybe to a thrift store or something.
Yeah, and it depends on the device. A lot of the cell phone carriers now actually do have recycling programs. They'll also give you discounts if you do recycle old devices. So it gives some incentive to give that device back. You know, the company might resell it, or it might get donated to another organization as well. The nice thing with old cell phones is even without a cell phone plan, they can actually be a very useful device for a variety of people. Most of the cell phones and smartphones that we have right now can really be a fully functioning computer if you want it to be. They have the power to do a lot of the day-to-day tasks that we work on, whether it's working within a document, submitting emails to other people. You can do a lot with it. And as long as you have a wireless connection, you don't even need a cellular service. So it can do a lot without needing to actually have a plan with a carrier.
Yeah. You know, Chris in Janesville has something that relates to this. Chris, hi. Thanks for calling.
You hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to talk briefly about, you know, talking about recycling computers and what to do with some of the really old ones. You know, a lot of people don't realize that there's a huge enthusiast community of people that are into these antique computers. And, you know, we're mostly talking about stuff from last century. The older the better, you know, for a lot of collectors, the old Commodores, the Atari computers, stuff like that, Apple IIs, you know, the whole bit. People collect them. They're actually, you know, getting kind of pricey, too, because a lot of people just throw them out. And, you know, people like myself want to preserve that history, show, you know, the younger generation what things were like. And I think it can also be a real, a real benefit to the young children, you know, to learn how to program and stuff like, you know, some of us did back in the 80s, you know, gives you a better understanding of how the technology actually worked.
Hmm. Interesting. Comment on that, Jesse.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the things I like about really any technology. I think it's really easy to take a look at, you know, a computer we've had for several years, maybe we don't find as much use in it and, you know, we get rid of it. But to somebody, that device can actually do quite a bit. There's a lot you can learn from it. And I actually remember even picking up a variety of devices from different recycling places. One was Swap or Surplus with a Purpose, where you could purchase old technology and actually, you know, learn on it, do a lot of things that otherwise, if you didn't have that those devices readily available to you, it gave a really, really good outlet to learn and to explore and to do new things. So I think it's extremely important to be able to recycle these devices because somebody is going to find a great use for it and they're really going to be able to enjoy themselves looking at this technology. And that's, you know, not even mentioning the people who love to collect a lot of old devices. And I know several people that really do like to collect old technology and have, you know, their own little museum where, you know, they keep everything nicely organized and are always looking forward to adding something to their collection. So there's so many people that look for this technology for so many different reasons.
Yeah, maybe I should have hung on to that Commodore PET. Yeah. Susie emailed from a group called Good News Project. They're a local nonprofit located in Wausau with an environmental focus. They recycle electronics and facilities, reuse of durable medical equipment. They are a DNR registered recycling collection site and 2020 recipient of the Wisconsin DNR's Recycling Excellence Award. So that's the Good News Project in Wausau. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of great recycling locations out there. That also might be a little bit daunting. The nice thing is that at least the state of Wisconsin does have a really good registry of locations to drop off materials for recycling. And this is one of those examples where, you know, you can find this Good News Project, and if you're local to that area and if you find it easy to drop something off or to volunteer, you can go to those locations. So you can find many places wherever you are throughout the state to see where you can, you know, one, just get rid of technology. I think a lot of people think about just throwing it away and recycling like we would, aluminum or plastic. But these devices can be recycled in a completely different way where people can actually use them. They can use the devices, and even if your devices are broken, there's probably someone really, really excited to find a way to fix it. So even those broken devices can actually be great things to have. If somebody does want to learn a little bit more about technology, they really do have a curiosity to find out how things work. You might find that you collect a few broken devices and you're able to put them together to get one functioning device. So I wouldn't even discount, well, this device is broken, no one's going to want it. There might be someone, and they might find a way to get it up and running again. So I think being able to give back to these various organizations is really, really important and useful.
Pat in Duluth has something that relates to this. Let's go there. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking this call. Since 92, I've been using Mac and Apple, and I used to teach, and I still teach through Community Ed. I'm very low tech. What I'm using, I have a laptop, and then I have a large desktop one. The only thing I use that for is to take pictures to use in my classes. And so a couple years ago, that got really slow and I couldn't even access it. I got it repaired. It lasted about 2 to 3 years to still take pictures and download them. But now the computer told me in the fall that the library was full, so I haven't been able to download anything. And I only use that laptop. I only use the computer for photo storage. I don't use music or anything else with it. So I wanted to know if I get a refurbished one, would it last as long as a new one? And I don't think there's a way to get my old one repaired, but might there be a way to still continue to use that? Those would be my questions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Pat.
Yeah. And I, so first I'd, I always, whenever you have some kind of technology, there might be a way to make it a little bit more useful or, increase its longevity. And whenever a device, whether it's a laptop or a desktop, a cell phone, runs out of storage, there are a few things that can be done. One is to free up storage if it's possible. I think in this case, another possibility would be to add storage. And in that case, it probably would, it might require going into a computer repair location, where they might actually be able to replace the hard drive with a bigger model and potentially clone all of the data and the operating system onto the new drive. That being said, there are limitations, so it may not be possible depending on kind of what you already have in the system, but it could be an easy option to still use the same device, get the same experience, but have, you know, more storage space. So that's something I would look into. And if you do know of anyone that does computer repair, or you do know of a local computer repair facility, they could at least give you a good idea of kind of what that would cost.
Should be one in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah, there should be. If usually, I mean, there are big and small computer places all over the place, and they can be, you know, larger franchises, or they can be, you know, just smaller. Smaller locally run businesses, but there's somebody around the area likely that would be able to help. Even somebody that's learning that would actually be able to help out. That being said, when you're learning, you know, mistakes do happen. So there are a lot of options, but I think going to a company and seeing what they could do would be useful. You know, purchasing a refurbished device, whether it's brand new or it has been used for a little bit, there's always a risk. Usually a refurbished device, it's been used for a while. You know, there's a certain amount of time that things will last. But, you know, I've had people buy a brand new computer. It fails within a month. I've had people use a computer for 10 years and never have anything go wrong. In many cases, there are ways you can make the computer last a little bit longer, but things will fail inevitably, and it's really difficult to know when, because there are a lot of factors that can add to it. So I think you could get a refurbished device, and it could work just fine. How long it's going to last is really uncertain. Usually for a refurbished device, the warranty is going to not be as long as a brand new device. You know, even in this case, you have a device that's not under warranty anyway, so if it were to fail, there's nothing you could do, at least to get a free repair. But I think a refurbished device is a really good option, and usually it will have a short-term warranty if you're buying a refurbished device from a manufacturer or even from a local computer store or computer repair facility. They might warranty a device for 30 to 90 days. Sometimes you'll get a vendor to warranty the device for about a year. Each organization is a little bit different. But I think you could go either way. Upgrading the device and getting more storage could be a good option. But depending on what you're looking for, you could find that the investment of actually purchasing a lower-end brand-new device might actually be a better expenditure of money than getting this device upgraded, because it might be a couple $100s. And a brand new device could be maybe $400. It depends what you need. A lot of the devices that you might need just for photos and collection of that kind of information are relatively inexpensive, especially if that's all you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
All right. There you go, Pat. Thank you so much for calling. Jesse LeGru, our guest today, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Great to have him with us as we talk electronic devices and recycling and maybe fixing some computer issues that you might have. Join in 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Natalie Guyette, our producer today, Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computers and your phone today with our guest, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect at Madison College. Great to have him back. And lots of callers online. Let's take a call from Arlene next. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning, Larry. I really appreciate this call. You're going to laugh about this because it's really funny. My dear son bought himself a brand new Apple iPad phone. And he got a free phone for me. Just to let you know, I'm 81 years old. When I was in high school, we had standard typewriters. I want to know if there's a way of turning off the 911 button on that phone because, and I'll tell you why, I inadvertently had the phone on, was going through things, trying to figure it out, and I hit the button, and about 10 minutes later, I had a police officer standing in front of my door and asking me what was going on.
Oh, 911 button. Jesse, what do you think?
Is an auto call, which may be the cause. So it depends on how you have your screen lock turned on. But if in the settings for your iPhone, there is an emergency SOS that you can actually turn on or off. That might allow you to, you know, not accidentally hit 911 or the emergency call button. But it would be in that the settings and emergency services.
So go to settings, Arlene, on it. There's a looks like a little sprocket or something. And you'll find settings and then go through there and you'll find. And what is it called again, Jesse?
It's the emergency call feature.
Emergency call feature. Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll have something called auto call, which should, it's basically meant so it'll automatically reach out if you need it. If you do turn that off, it shouldn't reach out without you needing to type something in yourself.
But that is
a problem. I've actually done the same thing a couple of times, not with an iPhone, but I put it in my pocket. I accidentally hit it, and all of a sudden I get a ring back a couple minutes later. Hey, you called us. Oops. And yeah, I've had the same issue. Usually it's paired with a screen lock. A lot of times those emergency features actually do get turned on with a screen lock. It's just a little bit challenging. But the emergency SOS in settings, you should be able to turn off the auto call, and that should help.
All right. Good luck, Arlene. Thank you. Gus in Fitchburg, it's your turn. Hi, Gus.
Hi. Hi, Jesse. I appreciate your work on the Innovation Committee at Madison College. I'm an instructor there, but I just... lost the capability in my iPhone SE last summer. I was on a canoe trip and I got some water in. So the phone doesn't work for cellular, but it works fine for Wi-Fi. So I got this dongle to hook up the monitor so I can see the monitor bigger. I'm just wondering if your input on getting a keyboard and a mouse hooked up. You know, because I think it has Bluetooth.
So I was hooking your cell phone up to a computer and looking at a keyboard. Can you do all that, Jesse?
Yeah, there are. You can actually get keyboards and mice that will do this. It's actually pretty common with iPads specifically, yeah. Just because they're a little bit bigger and people do like to use them as a computer. However, you can do the same thing with a phone as well. And if you're looking, so you can get Apple-made accessories, which are usually recommended just to make sure there's no compatibility issues. But for Bluetooth devices, usually it's pretty straightforward. You can actually look at the Apple site. They do have existing keyboards and mice that you can use, and they also list it based on how compatible they are with different iPhones or iPads. So at least you can get an idea of whether it's going to work or not. Otherwise, if you do have a different Bluetooth keyboard or mouse that you can test with, you can also try pairing it and seeing how it works. In many cases, if you do have a local store available, they'll probably already have local mice and keyboards there. And I know Apple stores, they're very helpful to make sure devices work. So you could probably actually go in and they can actually pair a device and make sure that it works. So there are ways you can do it. It does depend on the compatibility of both devices because there are different versions of Bluetooth. And a lot of the older phones, if you're not able to get the latest software updates, there might be some compatibility issues there. But you can do it. I would actually go to a store and test it out. Most of the time, they're going to have devices on display that you may be able to try pairing with your device to see if it works. So I definitely test it before you go ahead and purchase something. Now it might be a little bit limited just with, you know, social distancing, but there are a variety of locations where you can also get kind of free returns too. So definitely, yes, I'd be looking for probably a Bluetooth keyboard and see how it works.
All right, there you go. Thanks for calling, Gus. Appreciate it. Jerry in Hudson, Wisconsin, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Good morning. I've been looking forward to talking to you for some time. I have problems with Google Photos. And they are basically the sharing and so forth with Google Photos.
Okay.
I signed up for to use Google Photos, I guess, as opposed to just having Google Photos as my photo storage. I have a Motorola Moto 7 Android phone, and that's what was on there. And I like Google Photos, but I thought it'd be really neat to share it with my daughter-in-law and daughter so I didn't have to send them everything. And my daughter-in-law says it's now messing up all of her files, renaming photos if mine was different. So I need to know how to unshare, and I didn't want to do it without some advice first. And then, although I like the features, I'd like to not send photos through Google Photos because it makes people who don't use Google log in every time they get a picture from me.
Hmm. What do you think, Jesse?
All right. So there's a couple items here to kind of address. The first one with Google Photos and sharing. The easiest way to take a look at your Google Photos and the sharing settings and to remove those sharing settings is probably to actually go to your Google account on a desktop or a laptop computer. So I wouldn't use your phone. It can just be a little bit more challenging to navigate. And then you can actually take a look at your sharing settings. You can view your photos, but you can also view what your sharing settings are and who has access to it. I do use Google for a variety of services. I have it paired with my phone so that I can easily synchronize photos or other content when I need to. If you are in the Google Photos section, you can actually go to sharing, which is right on the left-hand side of the Google Photos tab, and you can actually just remove the share, which would remove anyone else's access to those photos or albums that you have available, which hopefully it's going to be there, because usually you're sharing with somebody else's Gmail account or another service. But it should be really easy to go to the Google Photos on the web, go to the sharing on the left-hand side, and it's actually just photos.google.com/sharing, and you can remove the data that you're sharing with other people.
All right.
The second part, which is how you're sharing photos with others, This can be a little bit tricky, especially if you are using, an Android device or even an Apple device. Most devices, when you want to share from your local cell phone album, they use a lot of things in the background. You can pretty much share a photo in about 20 to 30 different ways, and it makes it really, really complicated. If you're just trying to text somebody a photo, and many times it tries to link that back to Google Photos or a different service, rather than simply kind of adding that photo as like a multimedia type of text. On your cell phone, it will, if you do want to disconnect the Google Photos, one way you can do it, usually it's going to be in your settings for your device. It will have accounts that are paired with your device and what services are turned on. If it is Android, which I believe it is, you can also turn off the other services such as photos and everything else, which will disable some of the synchronizing features. But then the question is, when you do want to share photos with somebody else, how do you do it? The only other kind of easy way to do it on a cell phone is picture by picture by text message. And that would need to be done a little bit. It's a little challenging to do it in that way. Sharing it with Google Photos is a little bit easier, but it does kind of sound like there's a few other challenges there. Do you traditionally try to use texting when sharing photos?
That's the only way I've been able to get around the problem. If I do it directly on the text, I can't go to a photo and use and then set up the text and send it. It'll still make them log in. I can only do it if I use the little attach feature right on the text and then pick my photo out of my photos.
Yeah, that's the easiest way that I've had to go about it there. And if you are using the Google Photos app, and this is the challenging thing with a lot of phone upgrades too, is those applications will give you, 20 different ways to share a photo, and they're all sharing it in a little bit of a different way. The way you're looking for, which is the way you've done via the, whether it's a messages app or something else, you're kind of adding it as an attachment. It will generally allow you to do the same thing, usually, but you kind of have to select the application in order to do it. But depending on the version of the Android software, it can be a little bit more complicated. I'd probably recommend actually doing it directly from the text messages. It's actually the easiest I've had to be able to share pictures via text, is actually to open the text, open the photo option, and then select the photos that I want and send it that way. It's a little bit more intuitive than doing the opposite, which is going to your Photos application and then sharing it, just because of the number of options they have. And depending on the Photos app, you just may have limitations. So I think the way that you're doing it via text, if you want to do it with a cell phone, is probably the easiest way that you can do it.
Oh, there you go, Jerry. Thank you for calling. Well, Ron in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I have a Mac Mini. I bought it February 2011. And it was made in the middle of 2011. And I was told by the Apple techs that I can't no longer upgrade the operating system. They said that the latest for this particular model is High Sierra. I couldn't upgrade to, say, Mojave. When I bought it, it had Lion, but I've upgraded a few versions. Right now it's, 10.13.6 or something. I have an external hard drive, and I was just wondering, is that because there's a limit on the hard drive in the Mac? Because I did change the hard drive in the Mac from the mechanical to a solid state. But I also have an external hard drive.
The limitation here is the version of hardware that you have for Apple. Usually with the software that they do release, they only keep it available for, I believe it's the I want to say directly, the latest three hardware versions, but they have basically a limit. If you don't meet the hardware limit, you have to upgrade the hardware in order to use the latest operating system. So it's not hard drive space, most likely. It's actually just due to the fact the hardware in the Mac Mini is not supported by that version of the operating system. So in order to actually get the upgrade, you would actually need to get a new computer. There is not a lot of ways around that, and that is something to make sure that the software can, you know, fit the needs of, you know, most of the consumers with newer devices, and to actually assist with support, because it can be challenging when having older hardware and newer software. So in this case, unfortunately, the only thing you can really do if you do want the latest operating system is to upgrade to a newer version of the hardware.
All right. Ron, thanks for calling. Russ in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, Russ.
Hi, good morning. I had a suggestion for recycling older unneeded cell phones. I moved here from Illinois, and my former police department there, every once in a while, ran an ad in our local town newspaper, and they asked people to donate their old cell phones, and they had somebody, some tech person, would erase all your personal information, your pictures, and stuff like that. I'm not sure what all they left working in the phone, but they did leave the ability to either press an emergency button or dial 911, and they gave these phones out free to people who were, you know, shut-ins or maybe senior citizens, so that if there was an emergency, they had some way to contact the authorities.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Jesse, have you heard of that before?
Yeah, I've heard of those programs in the past. I haven't seen one recently. But there's a lot of opportunities for recycling those old devices. That is one of many. So there's a lot of great local options. It's almost too many to count.
Well, that's great, Russ. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly now at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, talking electronic recycling, but also taking some other standard problem questions relating to your computers with our guest today, Jesse LeGru. Let's go to Carol in Green Bay, who wants to know what she can do with a Corvus electronic calculator given to her mother-in-law in 1974. Corvus electronic calculator. What do you think, Jesse?
Was there a question about the calculator?
I think she wants to get rid of it.
Oh, okay. So there's actually a couple things. I mean, you could take it to a recycling place. That's a possibility. I think this is one of those items where there's probably somebody that would actually be interested in collecting it. Basically anything you can get out there that's of a certain age, there's somebody likely collecting it. And I can imagine people with old calculators. I could see that. A couple recommendations I would kind of have if you do kind of have a feeling of where you would like the device to end up. I mean, Craigslist has been a popular option to look for ways to sell different devices and different things that you're looking to get rid of. It's one way to kind of find a collector that might be looking to pick up one of those things. Otherwise, you can also still donate it at other locations, and there is, you know, a collection of them. Usually on kind of a state-owned website. I'm trying to think of the best, because it does feel like it's something somebody would probably want to collect. And I'm sure there are a variety of ways to kind of get in touch with those collectors, but it's going to be different from location to location. Goodwill is probably a place that there's a lot of locations people probably regularly go to find these devices, purchase them, and leave. And, you know, collectors will do that. For outreach, it's, you know, Craigslist might be an option, but you actually might just also have an easier time, you know, donating it to a location like Goodwill or another local e-recycling location, especially if you're looking, if it's functioning and if you're looking for somebody to kind of get some enjoyment out of it. Otherwise, you could always go to actually recycling it at a different location where they would recycle the materials and use it for new things in the future. But I'd say donating it somewhere where somebody might be able to purchase it and pick it up would probably be, I'm sure somebody wants it. I'm sure there's somebody out there that wants it.
Yeah, for sure. And Kurt in Madison wants to know how to recycle his, well, he's got a few old TV sets. Same kind of process or?
Yeah, TV sets are a little bit more unique. You might still be able to donate those to a different location where somebody can buy them. In many cases, just due to old CRT cathode ray tube TVs kind of being replaced by flat screen TVs, it might be one of those items where you would actually need to take it to a different location, a landfill, or have it picked up to get recycled in a different way. A lot of those devices do also, they actually have a fee in order to recycle them, which is, I think it's maybe $10 locally. And I think that's for one pickup. I think you could have a few different devices, and I believe that $10 would cover all of it. But I would check out your local, you know, municipality to see what recycling options that they have. Otherwise, you might actually be able to give it to Goodwill or something else. Many of those locations also, if they don't try to take in those devices to sell them, they'll also facilitate recycling them. For a location like Goodwill, it's probably best to give them items that they can resell just to cover operating costs because, you know, recycling it in a way where they have to work with landfills, I would not anticipate to be the primary motivation. That's to get things in the hands of other individuals. So if it's working, you know, I'd consider something like Goodwill if somebody could find use for it. If it's not working, you'd probably want to go to your local municipality and see how you can get them picked up. Usually it's during like big trash pickups, and you have to pay for that pickup ahead of time, but then they'll make sure that they can take the device and recycle it in a responsible way because it shouldn't be sitting in the landfill.
Jesse LeGrew, our guest, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Great to have him back to talk about computer issues and phone issues. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Frank and Racine next. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Larry. I've got a question on smartphones. I've been buying a smartphone each year, a Samsung track phone. And the one that I got this year, I'm too dumb to operate a smartphone, but a friend of mine activated the thing in one location and tested it making an outgoing phone call. When I got to another location, I couldn't make an outgoing phone call, so I don't know what happened from one location to the other. Do you have any ideas, Jesse?
So the first thing I would consider is, I don't know if you know who you have for your cellular service.
Well, it's a Samsung smartphone, so... They they have a customer service number. I guess that's probably what you're asking. I don't know.
Yeah, usually with so once you do have a cell phone, to at least get cellular services, so you can call from basically your phone with your phone number to another phone number. Usually there's a plan on the back end, similar to a landline, but it could be, you know, Sprint, Verizon, US Cellular. There's a lot of other local, national, and international providers. But they basically allow for the phone to act as a phone, so that you can actually make phone calls. It's probably not Samsung. And that's what I'd be kind of interested in to find out whether you actually do have cellular services in your location, because they can be different from location to location for a variety of reasons. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, when you look at your phone in the upper right-hand corner, usually it does have an indicator of whether it's connected to a service. Do you see anything like that on your phone that indicates it's connected or even not connected?
No, but I say, why is it active? It was activated and I could make an outgoing call in that location, and just 2 miles away in another location, I could not make an outgoing call. That's what confuses me. I've never had that trouble with Samsung track phones in the past.
Yeah, and it's a really good question. When you go back to that other location, have you tried going back to see if you're able to make a phone call at that other location?
Sure. Yeah.
And has it worked?
Yes.
Okay. So it does appear that it's location specific. So there are a couple things that I would try. I kind of get the idea. It could be one of two things. So the cell phones have two ways of making phone calls. You can actually make a phone call over wireless, and you can also make a phone call over cellular. So it can use two different ways to talk to a phone provider, so you can make a phone call. My guess is either, for whatever reason, the cellular signal just, you're in a location where it's just not working well. It could also be phone model dependent. Every now and again, you know, a phone model comes out. There might be an issue with the design of the hardware itself or the software, and it could just be enough where you can't get a cellular signal, and that could be the case. The other possibility is that cellular was not working before and it was actually using wireless. When you do move from one location to another, generally that wireless network or Wi-Fi network isn't coming with you. Usually it's, you know, it's staying at that location. So it also could be that it was using wireless, and since you did move, it's not connected to that wireless network again. Were you able to take a look at any of the signals when you were at the location? When it functioned? Did you see an indicator was on wireless or on cellular?
Well, no, the only difference was that the first location where it worked was had Wi-Fi, and the second location did not have Wi-Fi. But I say I bought Samsung track phones for the last 3-4 years. I get a new one every year, and I had the unique problem. But thanks a lot, Jesse and Larry.
Yeah. I think your second your last explanation was probably the right one, Jesse.
Yeah, it's possible it could have just been on wireless. I would take a look again if you do have wireless in your area, or you're able to travel to a different spot. Try to connect to a different wireless network. See if you can make a call. That'll at least give you an indicator of if it's a wireless issue or not. And usually the signal or the icons for wireless will be, you know, wavy lines coming up, starting with small at the bottom and large on top, and they'll be curved. And the cellular signals are generally bars that are going from left to right, from smaller to larger. So you can get an idea based on the icon which one it is, but hopefully it should help you troubleshoot a little bit.
Here you go, Frank. Good luck. Thank you. Bob in Franklin, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I got an odd one for you. I have a lot of trail cameras And of course, after a few years, some of them stop working. Can those be recycled?
Trail cameras.
Yeah, and I mean, they can be. I'm sure there's a variety of people that would like to take a look at them. At the very least, even if they're not reused, they can be, you know, recycled to so the components are reused in a responsible way. Usually for anything you're going to take to a place where somebody's going to buy it, most of the time it's always nice to have things that are currently functioning. But they could also be an interesting project for someone that's looking for a way to get things up and running. They can also break in different ways. So, you know, you might be able to, for example, see footage with it, but maybe it can't record to an SD card or can't transmit via wireless. Depends on the kind of trail camera you have. So there could be a recycling use for repurpose. But at the very least, if you did want to recycle it just to make sure it wasn't sitting in a landfill, you can do that, and you can do that through your local municipality or a variety of organizations, too, will also help to do that for you. And if you're, you know, in Wisconsin, there's a great list on the DNR website to find a spot in your area. There's tons of places. It's got a really great map and a really great outline of locations that'll take different kinds of electronics.
All right. There you go, Bob. Thank you. Paul in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I have a question and a comment from two callers ago. The caller about the location, if they have if it is a cell phone tower and it's not doing it from one location to another, just restart the phone and it should relocate the towers nearby in that location.
Just turn it completely off, let it sit a few seconds, and turn it back on. Yeah? Worth a try for sure.
My question is, I have a computer, just a normal, just an entry-level desktop Lenovo about a year ago, and I want to do extra, I want to do additional, like, more photo and video editing. Could I trade to an entry-level gaming computer, or should I just upgrade the one I have now?
Do you know what kind of editing you're looking to do?
Basic, maybe basic to intermediate.
Okay. It depends on how old the laptop is. So there are a couple of things I would do. You could upgrade your current device, and there are actually a few really quick things you can do depending on what your device has today that could actually make it much more capable of doing kind of what you wanted to. It's likely you can probably still do it today. It's just not going to be as responsive as you want to. So there are two things I normally look at. One is going to be the hard drive that you have installed in your device. If it's not an SSD or a solid state disk, upgrading to a solid state disk can dramatically improve performance. And the second is memory or RAM, random access memory, which is generally also upgradable. I would just find out, you know, look at your current laptop. You might need to look it up by serial number or look it up from even the materials when you purchased it and find out what do you have today. And usually there are going to be recommendations or guidelines for here's how far you can upgrade it and here's what you would need. So I would look at that because it's possible you can upgrade it and actually it could work really, really great. You really can't do much about the processor, but the memory and the hard drive can give you a really nice boost in performance. Outside of that, if you're looking for, you could always get a lower end gaming device. What you're probably going to get more there is going to be an improved processor in addition to the memory and RAM, the RAM and the hard drive. The RAM and the hard drive, honestly, if you do have, let's say, only 4 gigabytes of memory and you can upgrade to 16, or you have a traditional, a spinning disk hard drive or non-solid state, you can actually upgrade quite a bit just by upgrading those components, and you'll dramatically notice a performance. The challenge with doing those upgrades is, are they something you can do as an end user? That actually depends on the laptop. Sometimes they are customer replaceable, but it's always nice to actually have a company that does this on a day-to-day basis, because they might be able to not only upgrade those components for you, but also clone your hard drive. So all your applications, software, and files from the old hard drive get copied to the new one. And so you just, you know, drop off your computer, they upgrade the new parts, they copy your stuff over, you turn it on, and everything looks exactly the same as it did before. But hopefully it's going to be a little bit zippier. But I would take a look at that upgrade first, because it is very likely that you can just upgrade a few things, and it will give you the boost that you need, at least to do some beginning editing. And once you get to a point where you might be doing more aggressive things, maybe look for an upgrade at that point.
Yeah, that makes very good sense. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Paul. Well, Jesse LeGrew is going to be with us up until 12:30 today. We're talking electronics of all sorts of things with him. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email at twoideas@wpr.org. We will take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mailer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Larry Mailer here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for staying with us today. We're talking with one of our tech experts, and we're talking all about electronic device recycling and taking other kinds of computer questions that you might have. Jesse LeGrew, our guest, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. So what would you like to know about electronic recycling or refurbished devices? Other questions? I hope you'll join in. Lots of callers online. Diane in Madison, we'll give you a chance to start up here. Diane, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I have a 2011 Mac Pro, and I no longer get software updates, and I'm wondering, is there anything I can do about that besides getting a new one?
Unfortunately, the short answer is no. They do have requirements for hardware to get specifically operating system updates, but in many cases, a lot of the software that also runs on top of macOS may also have additional requirements, including the version of your operating system and potentially the version of your hardware. So the only thing you can do in this case to get those upgrades is really to upgrade to a newer version of the hardware.
Yeah, that's the way it works these days. Thank you for calling, Diane. Larry in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi. My question is, the phones that Walmart sells, whether it's Apple or Motorola or LG, are they first-line quality, like you'd buy at an Apple or U.S. Cellular or Verizon, or are they second?
For any of those devices, they will be, as long as they do have the same information. Usually, if you buy an Apple phone from really anywhere, it's going to be an Apple device, which is manufactured in the same way that the other devices may be manufactured. One, and this is not cell phone specific, but it's really related to any device. Sometimes when you do purchase a device from different locations, they may have a specific version that is sold at one store. Cell phones usually are a little bit more uniform. And if you're buying, you know, an iPhone 11 at one location with a certain specification, it's going to be the same phone if you buy it at a different location. So, you know, if it's got the same logos, it has the same information, and they are, you know, like legitimate Apple products, they are the same as where you'd buy them elsewhere. I always look for differences in terms of any kind of accessories that are given. In many cases, the biggest difference is whether phones are locked or unlocked. They may be locked to a specific cellular vendor. Sometimes they'll be unlocked where you can use it in different locations. And those are going to be cell phone specific. Outside of that, if you do see a device for sale in a different retail location, it's going to be safe to purchase it from them. And if you ever do have questions, you can always contact Apple or the other manufacturers just to get a verification to make sure, you know, there are no issues there. But for those phones at Walmart, yep, if they say Apple, those are real Apple devices, same as you'd get somewhere else.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it. Sandra in Mount Pleasant, your turn now. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What's the best way to erase a hard drive from an old Apple desktop before disposing of it or recycling it? And what's the best way to make sure you have all your pictures off? I have a little device called My Passport, which I've plugged into it. So now I guess I need to plug the passport into something to make sure everything is on it, or I'll have to research how to use the My Passport that I think I've saved everything on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the My Passport, if you do have another computer to use the hard drive on, you should be able to plug it into that other computer. And depending on how you backed it up, it might have a little application you might need to install on that other computer. But at least it would allow you to verify whether everything's backed up. So that way you can double check to make sure, yep, all my files that I'm looking for are there. If you ever did need an additional backup or still had concerns, you could also have it backed up by a computer repair store, and they can update or locate that on a flash drive or your passport or a different hard drive altogether. Another thing you could also do if you were extra paranoid is just keep the hard drive in an anti-static bag and don't get rid of it. That way, if for whatever reason you found out that your passport didn't have all the data you wanted, you could always go back to that original hard drive, you know, as long as it still functioned, and somebody should be able to get the data off for you. So you could always keep it and actually not recycle the hard drive if you were extra paranoid. That if it was really important data, that's something I might do, or I would, you know, make multiple backups. Another reason you also might want to consider the hard drive and just keeping it, especially if it does have important data, is the recycling aspect. Prior to getting rid of hard drives, the best recommendation that I can give is to actually destroy it. There are a variety of ways to get some data off the drives, and there are ways to wipe it so it can be reused. The recommendation, if you do want to make sure that you're protecting your files, is to actually physically destroy the platters, which are inside the hard drive. They're basically flat, round disks, at least if they're not solid state. Otherwise, if they are solid state hard drives, physically destroying it would be a recommendation there too, as well. So even if you are giving it to a recycling center, many cases they will not reuse those hard drives anyway. They want to dispose of those. So you might actually just want to keep it on a shelf. And if you ever need to go back to it, you at least have it. But if you do want to get rid of the hard drive, I'd actually remember taking a drill and drilling into it or finding another way to dispose of it. The different locations where you can recycle it, they'll do that as well. But the more verification you have that your data is destroyed from that drive, the better, because it's always good to know when you actually see it happen in front of you.
Yeah. There you go, Sandra. Thank you. Kurt in Poinette emailed wondering how to delete information on a non-working flip phone so he can donate it safely.
Oh, that's a good question. If the phone is not working, they usually have two types of storage where you're storing your information. One could be the local storage. One could be like an add-on card, like a micro SD or an SD card. It's likely on the internal storage that you're concerned about. if the phone doesn't turn on and it doesn't function, there's not a whole lot you can do outside of physically destroying the phone. You might be able to take it apart, but it may not be possible to actually remove or replace that internal storage. So if you were concerned about the storage on the device, you actually might want to recycle it just to get it properly, disposed of so the parts could be reused, than to actually reuse the phone itself. If it did function, I'd say you do a factory reset. That will at least make it difficult for somebody to get the data off. But if the phone doesn't turn on and you don't have any of those mechanisms available, I'd actually try to physically destroy the device and then actually take it to a recycling center where they can reuse the raw materials for new devices.
We have Miles with an email to say there are ways to upgrade older Apple products. He used a website called DOSDude One. Go to DOSDude1.com and then the My Software section of that. And depending on the type and age of the specific Mac, you may be able to upgrade moderately easily. He has just upgraded a 2011 MacBook Pro, and it works just fine. Also, there are videos on YouTube on upgrading used DOSDube 1 tools. It really is a shame that this isn't done directly by Apple, because those older machines are still quite powerful and useful. And what's better than recycling, continuing to use it regularly, he says.
Yeah, and so there are ways to, I guess, get around the installers for Apple so you can upgrade it. I would recommend not doing it for a couple of reasons. One is it's not supported by Apple, and it's possible that at any point if a patch is released from Apple that's not compatible with your hardware, it could make your computer unusable. So it is technically possible, but there is some risk in doing it that, you know, it's hard to know until actually something happens, but it would not be supported by Apple.
We have another email from Pauline. Pauline has some advice for our earlier caller, Frank, about phone service. He should call TracFone directly, because they've had a TracFone for years and their customer service is excellent. They can walk him through the settings and it will probably be able to help him so that he can make calls in different locations. And she gave a number. It's 800-867-7183 and just ask for technical support. So again, it was an 800 number. 800-867-7183 and ask for tech support. And that makes sense to me, Jesse.
Yeah, it's a really good idea, and actually looking it up, so those are prepaid devices. So TracFone is actually the wireless provider. So I would actually recommend calling them, and they can help to walk through any issues, including if there is kind of a signal issue from place to place. So that's a really good recommendation.
All right. Donna from Minnesota called with some advice for Frank also. She pointed out that different types of phones, Samsung, LG, Apple, use different sets of towers, and that could be part of the issue. She also mentioned another purpose for non-working electronics. Things like trail cams, even if not working, can be put up to deter trespassers. Old iPods or MP3 players could be donated to women's shelters or other similar places, because having headphones and a music player often keeps strangers from talking to you. So some tips there. And a listener emailed to say their local computer repair person couldn't read their hard drive to transfer to a flash drive. Is this a lost cause? They want their pictures.
It may be. There are some limitations with data recovery at local stores, and there are data recovery companies that kind of They specialize in it, even if the device isn't functioning. The downside with, or the challenge with going with those options is they're generally a little bit more expensive, because they actually do need to do more work to get those devices up and running, including replacing parts and working in clean rooms. So there's always a possibility for getting the data off as long as the data storage itself is not physically damaged. But usually it's going to cost quite a bit of money if you have to go that deeply into it.
Remembering back to a similar problem that I had years and years ago. That's when I switched to Macs, and I've been on Macs ever since. Fewer problems for sure. Stacy in Menasha, your turn. Hi, Stacy.
Hi there. I think you had a similar call, but not exactly the same. I'm wondering if we have old iPhones that don't power on anymore. Is there any way to retrieve the photos and text and things like that from the phone?
What do you think, Jesse? Did we lose Jesse there? We may have lost Jesse. Jesse LeGrew, our information security architect, may have a little problem there. Let's try and get him back, Christina, if we can. In the meantime, I'll mention a couple of things about what's coming up. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about friendships on the show. Do your friendships feel a little off right now? You know, that's something that a lot of people are wondering about and worried about a little bit. And so we'll have a guest expert talking about that with us, about how the pandemic has impacted interactions or maybe the lack of interactions with friends. So we've got that coming up. And at 11:45 tomorrow, we'll be talking with a mammogram expert about breast health. So those are a couple of the programs that are coming up on the Ideas Network on tomorrow's program. So great to have that as well. Did want to mention again that we have our book club coming up, and I'm thinking we have, I'm trying to remember the date for that. Maybe Jill can remind me of the date for it. But our book club is in effect, and I think it's March 29th that our guest will be on to talk about that. Now, I'll give you some more on that. But we've got Jesse back now. Jesse, are you back with us?
I am. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you. Stacy is wondering, I don't know if you heard it, she's wondering if it's possible to get her phone and texts, to get photos and texts off a phone that is no longer able to be powered on, or she can't power it on. It's an iPhone. Stacy, are you still there? Oh, looks like we lost Stacy in that as well. But she's got an iPhone and can't get it to turn power on. She wants to get the photos and the texts off of it. What can she do?
I cannot hear you.
Oh. Well, we're having all kinds of technical problems right here at the end of the show. Are you hearing me now, Jesse? Oh. Well, You know, I mentioned on the show that we're going to talk about what the pandemic has done to impact interactions or the lack of interactions with friends. I guess the pandemic has also impacted our ability to interact with our guest, at least temporarily here on the show. So I'm really sorry for that, for sure. I wish I was able to help you out. Jesse, can you hear me now? Okay, well, I tell you what, we're going to go back to our book club and talk about the book club for just a minute, because it's March 25th. That's the date when we launch our first book in the Larry Mueller Show book club. And it's June 24th, and it is called, the book is called The Geography of Bliss. And it's a kind of a travel book, but the author was looking at places where people were happy and blissful, and it's really quite a book. And it's, if you haven't gotten it yet, or if you've read it, I hope you'll really tune in March 25th for The Geography of Bliss to hear about that. Jesse LeGru back with us. Jesse, are you there?
I am. Hopefully I'll stay here.
So how do you get photos off of an iPhone photos and text messages off an iPhone that can no longer, the phone itself can't power up anymore?
Yeah, if the device doesn't turn on anymore, it can be quite a bit challenging. You know, one thing I'd always do with any device that doesn't turn on is at least, you know, try to plug it into a device, see if it will power cycle after a certain amount of time. They do have a reset for the iPhone as well to see if it will reset and power back on, basically for the power management features. There might be locations that can physically take apart the iPhone to try and take the storage out, but it's unlikely that you're going to be able to get the data back from a dead iPhone. I'd recommend contacting Apple to see if they do have options for it, but if you don't have backups or other synchronized data somewhere else, it's unlikely you'll be able to get that data back, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's too bad. Would they, taking it to a store, a Mac store, would that help, do you think?
It's at least worth asking. They can try a few troubleshooting steps to get the data back off. One of the, you know, benefits but also challenges in this area is many of our devices are encrypted by default. So if the device is encrypted, it makes it even more challenging to get that data off. And usually that's going to be default to really protect your data so no one can steal it. The challenge is it makes it challenging to recover data if something's broken.
Oh, man. Well, on that note, we are now out of time. Jesse, thank you so much. Look forward to your next visit. I always appreciate it. I think you're back on, sometime in May, but we'll look forward to it. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGru, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Actually, Beth Wendt, another IT person, will join us on April 12th with a show as well. Well, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.